A wholly unjustified and brutal invasion of Iraq. I mean, of Ukraine. Iraq.
I'm a hawk. I would have picked up arms myself to prevent 9/11 again.
As president, I wanted to give myself the Congressional Medal of Honor, but they wouldn't let me do it. They wouldn't let me do it. I said, I'm going to give myself the Congressional. I've always wanted that.
We just flew B-52, B-1 bombers in the South China Sea. We're not going to pay attention.
In November of last year, this podcast broke the story of Ron DeSantis overseeing torture at Guantanamo Bay during its worst year, based on an exclusive interview with former detainee Mansour Adafi. This brought to light for the first time some of his highly problematic actions there. Beyond the most obvious of running legal cover for torture, he was lying to detainees that he was there to be their legal advocate, only to use their trust in him to torture them harder, to not only being present for force feeding, but seeming to take pleasure in it. As a designated human rights lawyer, Ron showed his true character, helping cover up crimes the international community was rightfully condemning, choosing to goose-step alongside Bush and Cheney. For months after our story came out, kind of to my surprise, it received zero coverage in the mainstream media. It got picked up on a couple alternative left media outlets, but even there it wasn't much. But then there was a turning point. The interview got the attention of Harper's Magazine. Harper's is the longest-running magazine in America, published since 1850. Among other accomplishments, ran Seymour Hersh's original reporting on the My Lai Massacre back in 1970. So 3 months after our story ran, in their February issue, unbeknownst to me, funny enough, they published a portion of my interview with Mansour. In early March, their social media pages started promoting the interview. Then, all of a sudden, there was an interest in the story from the news media. As I had hoped, by publishing the original story, other journalists started doing their own digging and uncovering more details. Some credited Eyes Left with breaking the story, like a great featured print article in The Baffler magazine by Jasper Craven, as well as a Yahoo News piece by Alexander Nazarian. Others just did their own interviews with Mansour, asked the same questions, and left out how it came to light. Then there was another turning point when the Washington Post published their own story on March 19th, one of the outlets that didn't want to mention us, taking it to the next level of establishment media attention as one of the papers of record for the ruling class. That Washington Post reporter, Michael Cranish, added a really important find, an unearthed CBS interview from 2018 where DeSantis says the force-feeding practice may have come at his recommendation.
So were you interviewing terrorists? Were you a legal advisor?
I was a legal advisor.
For those that were doing...
The things that would happen is the thing you notice the day you get down there is for these detainees, the jihad was still ongoing.
Right.
And they would wage jihad any way they can. Now, they're in a facility, so it's limited, but some of the things they would do hunger strikes. So everything at that time was legal in nature one way or another. So the commander wants to know, well, how do I combat this? So one of the jobs of the legal advisor would be like, hey, you actually can force feed. Here's what you can do. Here's kind of the rules of that.
So here, Ron admits something pretty major that was not picked up on at all by the Washington Post nor any other media. At first glance, it's already significant. DeSantis implies that either he recommended force feeding as a method to combat the hunger strike, which he called a terrorist jihad, or at the very least, he was part of the legal team that signed off on it. But that is not why this is really significant. It is well documented that force-feeding hunger strikers had already been taking place nonstop for years prior to DeSantis' arrival in 2006. So why would DeSantis say he was part of the decision to use force-feeding against hunger strikers when force-feeding had already been authorized and used against them for years? What nobody has caught, including the Washington Post, is that what began in 2006 was a major change in force-feeding, when it became specifically designed to inflict extreme pain. Mansour Adafi told me that prior to the arrival of DeSantis in 2006, it was a relatively tolerable procedure. Previously, it was conducted at the base hospital, with detainees lying down on a cot with a normal-sized nasal tube and done no more than twice per day. While it was meant to be a very unpleasant experience in order to break the hunger strike, the determined protesters were able to endure it day in and day out and continue their strike. Then in the DeSantis era, what he seems to admit to having helped recommend and authorize was making it just absolutely brutal, using totally unnecessarily thick nasal tubes with sharp metal tips at the end that would cause bleeding, with detainees tightly restrained from head to toe in a torture chair, administered violently by guards, coupled with beatings, and done over and over and over again to the point of extreme vomiting and diarrhea while still strapped to the chair. This was impossible to endure. It was about using pain and suffering and violence to break the resolve of the peaceful protesters, simply because they are making problems on the international stage for the embroiled Bush administration. That is what was recommended and authorized by the legal team DeSantis was part of in 2006. Not force-feeding itself, but extreme torture under the veil of a quote-unquote legal medical procedure. So in 2018, when Ron fessed up to giving that legal stamp of approval, he probably never assumed the media would look beneath the surface. And he has been right until now. The Washington Post also interviewed a corroborating source, former detainee Abu Sarah Ahmed Abdelaziz, who is not a hunger striker, but says he spoke to DeSantis multiple times and that his pleas to him for legal and humane treatment always resulted in things getting worse. This was a really important contribution that helped back up Mansour's accusations. I have actually been speaking with Abdelaziz since before that story was published and have some really great recorded interviews with him I will be releasing here in the near future. Then another turning point happened in late March. After refusing to answer requests from the press to comment on whether or not Mansour's accusations were true, DeSantis finally talked about it in an interview, and it was terrible. Piers Morgan basically tried to help him kill the story with a totally false framing.
One of the things they said was that you authorize the use of force feeding.
That's some of the true. Yeah, that's not true. Yeah, any of the stuff that people
just to finish saying, force feeding the detainees who were on hunger strike, was that true?
So I was a junior officer. I didn't have authority to authorize anything. There may have been a commander that would have done feeding if someone was going to die, but that was not something that I would have even had authority to do.
So that's wrong.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so this was a totally made-up accusation. Nobody ever reported that DeSantis himself authorized torture. The Washington Post reported that DeSantis himself indicated he may have suggested the torture practice of force-feeding in his capacity as a legal advisor. So Piers asked him to respond to an accusation that was never made. But the biggest pieces of the scandal Piers completely left out. That Ron observed torture as a human rights lawyer and never reported the torture making him complicit. That he pretended to be the legal advocate and allied to the detainees in order to abuse their trust for intelligence to use against them. And that the man notorious for being a bully appeared to take great pleasure in watching the horrific abuse of at least one eyewitness, Mansour Adafi. Either Piers actually knew nothing about the story he was asking a, quote, hard question about, or he was intentionally trying to help run cover for Ron's past. And notice how Ron started to launch into his answer before Piers even finished the question, which is also funny given the fact that he was answering an accusation that had never been leveled against him before because Piers got the accusation totally wrong. It was almost as if he knew it was coming, like the whole thing was a setup to bury the story. Thankfully, the softball question didn't take any momentum out of the story, and Ron finally faced a tough question about it from the press. Less than a week ago, Ron took questions at Israel's Museum of Tolerance, of all places, probably expecting a friendly press pool. One reporter hit him on the torture story. This clip has gotten so viral, it was even on the May 1st episode of The Stephen Colbert Show.
That wasn't the only low light from DeSantis' trip. Here he is responding to a question about a former Gitmo detainee who claims DeSantis was present while he was being tortured.
During your time at Guantanamo, did you witness any incidents?
No, not all that's BS. No, totally, totally BS.
Governor DeSantis, you say you were present during those proceedings?
Who said that?
Detainees told us.
How would they know me? Okay, think about that. Do you honestly believe that's credible? So this is 2006. I'm a junior officer. Do you honestly think that they would have remembered me from Adam? Of course not. They're just trying to get into the news because they know people like you will consume it because it fits your preordained narrative.
Do you really think a guy would remember me? No one remembers me. I don't remember me. What's my name again?
Yeah, that's a meltdown. Ron is clearly rattled and finally being haunted by these skeletons. I think his defense of saying, how could these people possibly remember me? I'm just one guy among hundreds so long ago. That is perfectly answered by the aforementioned detainee and DeSantis witness Abdelaziz in a conversation we had a few weeks ago.
The bad people were not much than 20% or 25%.
Mm-hmm.
More than 70% of people were doing their job without being malicious toward us,
right,
without trying to hurt us, without enjoying to make people suffer.
Right.
Despite they are soldiers, they are under order.
Right.
But they are not required to do very bad things to us.
Right.
So those bad people, we cannot forgive them because they were doing extra job, I can say. They were volunteering
right
to torture people, to make people suffer.
Right. You were one of the bad ones, Ron. People remember you because you were part of some terrible, traumatic moments in their life. What was described as by far the worst year of torture at Gitmo. Bullies and abusers tend to forget their victims, but it doesn't work the same the other way around. It's also interesting that he's not just owning it. Trump, if you remember, was elected on advocating more torture, suggesting the U.S. start doing even more war crimes against Muslims on the battlefield and in detention. Perhaps Ron is denying his involvement rather than boasting of being tough on terrorists because he is a lawyer and he knows that what he did was not within the bounds of the law. He got his hands dirty and a little bloody too, so he'd rather wash them off, even if taking the Trump approach would score him some political capital. Furthermore, there are still his actions in Iraq, which have yet to be uncovered, which we speculated about in our original story, and he may be bracing for some more allegations. I still believe there is a story there if someone can find a source for it.
You also had a lot of detainees claiming abuse because this was in the wake of Abu Ghraib, and that was used offensively against our guards. So what I learned from that and I took to Iraq when I was working with SEAL Team 1 is... They are using things like detainee abuse offensively against us. It was a tactic, technique, and procedure.
Nevertheless, this is all now a problem for the rising far-right leader and current Navy officer. He is currently relying on the fact that he has only one accuser, asserting that he was a witness, and even a participant in the torture. He can just say, well, this person just wants attention and is manipulating the media. You can't judge me off the claims of one guy. So the worst thing for Ron right now would be another victim testifying to his complicity in human rights abuses. And that is exactly what I have for you today. I was able to interview another former detainee who, like Mansoor, was a hunger striker, who was beaten and bloody in front of legal observer Lieutenant Ron DeSantis. Before we hear his testimony, I have to explain that my source insists on remaining anonymous. Part of that is, as you can imagine, based on what these detainees have been through, a justifiable fear of retaliation from the U.S. or a future President DeSantis. Both Adafi and Abdelaziz have put themselves at great risk by going public with their accusations. But for my source in particular, he is living in a country where the government that agreed to take him in upon his release from Gitmo made his residency there contingent on a few rules. One of those rules was that he was never to speak to the media. He even had to sign a document agreeing to these terms and risk being deported from his country of residence, where he has a life, just for sharing his story. But he is taking that risk in order to help expose one of the perpetrators of the torture he endured. So this former prisoner answered my questions on the condition that I would conceal his identity. I did due diligence in verifying who he was. Based on the info he gave me, I pulled his prisoner file from the Guantanamo documents published by WikiLeaks. I also had other sources who know him, including Mansoor Adafi, corroborate he is who he says he is. The audio of his voice you will hear before it is translated is distorted to help mask his identity. The translation is by my friend Omar Abu Sheikh, who received the original recording. I was only able to get some brief comments from him with just a couple follow-up questions, but as you will hear, it adds extremely damning new corroborations to the testimony of Mansoor Adafi.
I was one of the hunger strikers and was force-fed for 10 years. In 2006, I was tortured by the camp administration and medical staff until I passed out. I was taken to ICU as a result of the torture. Lieutenant DeSantis was one of the officers who oversaw the force feeding and the torture that we endured in 2006. He and other officers, translators, and interrogators would come to see us during the force feeding. He was among the officers who mistreated us, including during the torture which was used against the prisoners on hunger strike. He was also present during the raid of Camp 4, which ended in its closure after assaulting the prisoners, beating them, and shooting them with rubber bullets. Yes. This Lieutenant DeSantis was one of the officers who mistreated us, broke the hunger strike, and shut down Camp 4.
When did you first realize that Governor DeSantis was the same young lieutenant you saw back in 2006?
I recognized DeSantis when Mansoor shared his photo in a WhatsApp group 2 years ago.
What is your response to DeSantis claiming that you and Mansoor could not possibly remember him from so long ago?
DeSantis is someone who fakes facts.
When you first met DeSantis, did he initially say he was there to be your legal advocate?
Yes. When he first met us, he told us that he came to help us be treated humanely.
And what was the worst incident you endured that DeSantis was present for?
The worst of what I experienced while he was there was the torture by force feeding and beating at the hands of the guards. He was looking at me like I was an animal. There was a lot of blood on my clothes and on the floor.
This exclusive testimony corroborates all of Mansour Adafi's key claims, especially DeSantis' role as someone brought in to brutally break the peaceful and legitimate protest by the hunger strikers, under the guise of being a human rights defender. Now, two eyewitnesses have testified that DeSantis was complicit in human rights violations and failed to act in his legal responsibility to stop or report those crimes. And as both eyewitness accounts reveal, DeSantis' personal mannerisms while witnessing these heinous acts demonstrates a level of sadism and inhumanity that should preclude anyone from political or military power, both of which Ron possesses a lot of, with aspirations for much more. As journalist Jasper Craven wrote in his article for The Baffler, quote, "Ron DeSantis' blind faith to the military in its worst moments doesn't bode well should he ever claim the title of Commander-in-Chief." Thank you for listening to Eyes Left, which is a production of The Empire Files, a 501c3 media nonprofit. If you'd like to support our work, you can make a tax-deductible donation at patreon.com/empirefiles. The transcript for this episode will also be published at empirefiles.substack.com.
Eyes Left.